How come that we can turn against ourselves to the degree that we end up rejecting, loathing, and even hating ourselves? See, self-rejection and self-hatred are common experiences in the human psyche. But there are also experiences we usually don't talk about. We admit to anxiety and depression, loneliness and anger and other struggles. But the fact that we may despise ourselves, that's just too vulnerable and too much to share with anybody else, which is why when we do feel self-hatred, we often also feel completely isolated. It is a very important topic, self-rejection and self-hatred, especially among young people. Because when you look at the increase of suicides in the last 10 years, especially among the younger population, and you assume, even though there is not one cause, one single cause why someone takes their lives, but if you assume that intense self-rejection and pain is a part of why people go to that step, you can see that this is an increasing problem that we need to discuss. And in this two-part series, we're going to just do that. The first part is all about why do we develop self-hatred? Where does this come from? What's the purpose of it? And I want to help you to understand that it's not a flaw and that it's not something that's written in stone and you cannot get out of it. And it's certainly not a reflection on who you are, but it has actually a protective mechanism underneath. And in the second part, we'll talk about how to move from self-rejection and self-hatred to self-acceptance and eventually self-love. So where does self-rejection and self-hatred come from? Well, usually we're not born with these feelings, even though I have to say there is a caveat that I had many clients that told me that they already felt that they were not wanted in the womb. They told me this in a hypnotic state. Now, whether their subconscious already picked up on what the mother or the environment felt about them in the womb, or whether there was an epigenetic component, meaning that there is a release of maybe stress hormones and other endocrines when the mother feels extreme anger, frustration, anxiety, or hatred that then have an effect on the genetic makeup of the child. All of this are valid possibilities. But in general, most of us are born more with the idea that we are helpless and we are vulnerable and the parent will take care of us. Just like you see it in nature overall, that there is this idea of a newborn that it is protected and loved. Now, when that is not the case, when things happen that make you as a child wonder, oops, why is there no protection, or why is there just maybe a negative energy coming towards me, or maybe even punishment, or why is my environment not stable but unpredictable? The brain is trying to make sense out of this. So for example, Anne was happy-go-lucky until the age of 12, and then the parents just one day told her, we're going to have a divorce. The suitcases were already packed for the dad. He moved out the same day and pretty much moved away from that hometown where Anne lived because he got a job far away. So she barely saw him. And she was stuck with a mother who was already not very emotionally available and rather difficult to deal with. So Anne felt very, very alone. And then when her father started a new family with a new wife, she felt completely abandoned. And her mind just tried to understand what happened, tried to resolve the confusion. Whether it is that you feel neglected, abandoned, or maybe punished, or only conditionally accepted, or even abused, all those things are signals for that survival aspect of our brain to try to decipher. So what does it mean? And how should we respond to it? And how can we keep ourselves alive? And in general, when there is this childhood confusion, there are four possible answers the mind is considering. The first one is, whatever happened has nothing to do with me. It's all their stuff, and there's nothing I could do about it. That's number one. Number two is, whatever happened is not my fault, but it also means I cannot really trust others. I have to rely on myself. The third one is, whatever happened was my fault, and if I would have acted differently, if I would have figured out earlier what to do, I could have prevented this from happening. And then the fourth one is, whatever happened is my fault, and it's a clear sign that I'm not lovable, that I'm not good enough, and maybe that I'm not even supposed to be here. So that's the most severe. So number one, where you don't say it's your fault, it's other people's fault, the most self-affirming one. That's usually where people are getting through their childhood, even though it was hard, with more resilience and a stronger sense of self. Number two, where you say it's not your fault, but you cannot trust others, usually ends up in attaching with avoidance. And you keep people on arm's length, and you always look out for being once again disappointed, and maybe often just end up alone or in a relationship, but still feeling not very connected. Number three, where you feel like you should have done something differently, there's a lot of guilt and blame there. And often people become anxiously attached because they always wonder, what do I need to do to please the other person so that they don't leave me, that they don't abandon me? And it's driven with a lot of insecurity and anxiety. And people that find early on in their life, that is the answer. I need to always do what others want me to do, often also end up becoming chameleons because their focus is so much on their environment and their relationships and very little on themselves. And then number four, which is the most self-rejecting, is the one that just assumes that there is something wrong with you, that this is what you deserve. There's just something that shows you're not good enough, not lovable, and that's that. And that is not connected with so much guilt, because guilt is all about, I did something wrong. And with guilt, at least you have this idea, well, I can learn from this, and then I can do it right next time. So guilt has a little bit of hope attached to it. Shame, on the other hand, which is exactly with this fourth option, is basically saying, I am wrong. There is something fundamentally flawed in me, and there is nothing I can really do about that. And even though shame is something that becomes an own identity at some point, it is also connected to blame, where we basically say, I feel ashamed for who I am, and I blame myself that this is who I am, and I need to punish myself. And self-rejection can be such a form of punishment. Self-rejection is anger turned inwardly. Now, for Anne, she ended up in self-rejection because she did believe that her father, that the man that she adored, that anchor, that source of love and compassion, once he turned away from her, that this was a clear sign that she was not good enough for him. And even though she, deep inside, was angry at him and would have loved to tell him, how dare you to leave your daughter alone and or basically behind and just turn a page and start a new life, she never did say that. And so all that anger was then directed against herself and ended up in self-rejection. Now, self-rejection and self-hatred are fueled by shame and other emotions as well. But let's say shame is one of the main fuels. And Shame is fueling itself by looking for evidence that there are reasons why you should not feel good enough or flawed or why you don't fit in. And since it's an ongoing evidence finding that comes with self-rejection and self-hatred, often people don't necessarily attribute their childhood as the root cause, but it's more like overall the picture of their life that made them feel this way. This can be about body images. This can be about the sense of belonging or not achieving enough. It can be about not reaching the benchmarks that, you know, you're supposed to do and reach as a productive member of society. The messages of not being good enough are everywhere. And if you're susceptible and vulnerable to take on those messages, it's easy to feed the shame and the self-rejection on a daily basis. I talked about that by trying to make sense out of whatever confusion our brain is dealing with in regards to neglect or rejection or judgment or abandonment, that there is this option of, well, it's my fault, I'm not good enough, I'm flawed, and that's that. And at that point, you could say it's almost like a bifurcation. So you can go into the direction of self-rejection. And sometimes self-rejection is more about a part of you. I reject my body. I reject that my brain is slow. I reject that I'm awkward. But when you go into self-rejection, it is a different relationship to yourself than if you go into self-hatred. Now, let's talk about the difference. Self-rejection often ends up in self-neglect. See, when you reject someone, they drive you nuts, you don't like them, you don't want to hang out with them, you ignore them. You just don't want to be close to them. And you don't spend a lot of time thinking about the person that you rejected because you just move on. If you reject yourself, it's very similar, besides that you cannot really get away from yourself. So because you always have to face yourself and especially face the things that you want to reject, you tend to avoid yourself. You don't look in the mirror because you don't like your body. You don't go out and mingle with others because you feel like you have nothing interesting to say and you're an oddball anyhow. You don't really apply yourself for advancing in your career because you think you're not smart enough. So why should you set yourself always up for failure? And by avoiding these aspects of yourself, you more and more also neglect yourself because you don't want to really care about yourself. You don't want to really pay attention to yourself. So people that reject themselves often distract themselves with things that just keep them occupied. It can be others. It can be hobbies. It can be self-medication. It can be very self-destructive behavior. Underneath self-rejection, there is certainly also shame and anger at oneself, but the solution is more to numb out and not feel because you give up on that things can be different. You're not obsessing so much about yourself. You're really trying hard to forget about yourself, which in the end is very sad because what happens is that you become further and further away from yourself in your mind, but the body still keeps a score. So a lot of people that feel those emotions of self-rejection but don't want to deal with it hold tension, create inflammation and chronic pain because everything gets transferred out of the brain into the body and the body has to deal with this. So how do you know that you have self-rejection? Well, you just have to ask yourself, are there certain aspects about yourself that you give up on? Aspects where you feel there is a label, the stamp of not approval on, but you don't want to deal with it. You avoid looking at it. You don't want to make any improvements or changes. And overall, that means your relationship with yourself is not very strong. Maybe you feel very fragmented. You feel, I really am very strong in, I don't know, playing video games, because this is where you can shine in a persona that you want to be, but you feel you want to avoid any kind of social settings because there, that self-rejection, that sense of being completely different than others and not belonging becomes too overwhelming. So you just cut that aspect of your life out. Then there is self-hatred. So I said there is a bifurcation. So then self-hatred comes also from this decision that there is fundamentally something wrong with you, and that, you know, it's your fault to whatever happened or whatever the environment is projecting back onto you. Now, you could say, well, sometimes when you go through self-rejection, it may end up going back into self-hatred. That's very possible. It happens especially when the feelings of anger and loathing become so strong that you cannot shut them down. That overwhelming intensity of not being able to stand certain aspects of yourself or yourself overall cannot be ignored. And that's when it ends up in self-hatred. Now, think about when you hate someone. When you hate someone, you actually have a very strong relationship with that person, because that person is occupying a lot of real estate in your mind. Hate is a very intense feeling, and it's the polar opposite of love. But if, you know, everything is a circle, you could say they are also very close to each other, because you spend time thinking about that person that you hate and why you hate them. So when you hate yourself, you put a lot of energy and attention on yourself, albeit very negative attention, and also looking at yourself in a very distorted view. But paradoxically, if self-rejection is, I don't matter, so I'm not even trying to look at myself, and self-hatred says, I matter enough to punish myself or be mad at myself, that you're actually paradoxically closer to healing when you hate yourself than when you reject yourself, simply because your eyes are on yourself. You are not ignoring yourself or avoiding yourself. The mindset with what you're staring at yourself is not very open or curious, but at least you're not pretending that you don't exist. Now, underneath self-hatred is a secret longing to be shown that, after all, it's not true, that you are actually lovable. And this is something that's especially a pattern that I describe in my book, The Empowerment Solution, the lover pattern, often have as a driving force to look for the chosen one, the one that they want to finally see as the rescuer of their misery. Now, when you hate yourself, there is a desire to be shown that you can be loved. Unfortunately, what often happens is that as you hate yourself so much, and as the shame is looking for reinforcement to exist, everything that happens in the relationship will be interpreted as, okay, sure, I'm not lovable. It's my fault. I'm the one who, again, is rejected. Even this person doesn't want to stay with me. And that creates, of course, often just even more trauma and painful experiences that then only further reinforce the sense of self-hatred. And on top of it, and that's another story, another topic, when you have had early experiences of rejection or abuse, and you already loathe yourself and hate yourself, and you want to look for someone who can set you free, subconsciously you're choosing the same type that has hurt you in the first place, hoping that when this person shows you that they can love you, that it was actually about that parent or friend, whoever it was, that was hurting you in the first place, and it wasn't about you. But if you choose someone who is already as volatile, as critical, and maybe as abusive as that person that caused this hurt in the first place, in the end, you will probably get the same results. Now, I talked about that all of this has to do with a protective function. Now, you may have guessed already that there is a safety mechanism underneath self-rejection and self-hatred. So when you reject yourself and you avoid anything that potentially can draw negative attention towards you, because you assume that you're just not good enough, you just don't look good enough, you're not tall enough, you're not thin enough, you're not smart enough, you're not interesting enough, whatever those things are, by avoiding it, you don't have to deal with it, and you're safer. Of course, your life is shrinking, your comfort zone is your prison, but from the perspective of the protective aspect of the mind, that's the best solution, because it's a given that this is who you are and that you cannot necessarily change. And when it comes to that self-hatred and that feeling of being not lovable, even though I just said there is also the desire sometimes to find that person that sets you free, overall, there is also a greater sense of, well, I already hate myself so much. So if someone going to reject me, if someone hates me, it doesn't really hurt that much. Because whatever they can do to me, I already do to myself. Like this client of mine that showed the self-hatred through daily visualizations that really came up spontaneously. This is not something that he conjured up. And the visualizations were simply as soon as he walked out of his job on his way home, he saw himself being beaten bloody to a pulp. And it, of course, brought up a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress when he saw these images and he couldn't help himself. But at the same time, he realized, well, this is already something he did when he was younger. Because until the age of 16, his alcoholic, super violent father did exactly that. Every time he came home, he just beat him up just because he existed. Just because the father was in the mood, or just because he may have done something little that upset him. And so he figured out, and as a teenager, that when I already am prepared to experience this and see myself having been beaten, I was first. And whatever my dad does afterwards doesn't really hurt that much. And unfortunately, he continued this unconscious pattern of self-protection, of self-beating him up, which is self-hatred in a very physical form, until his 50s. It was a protective mechanism once, but it certainly didn't serve him any longer after his father passed. So ask yourself, how has self-rejection and self-hatred tried to keep you safe? Maybe with self-rejection, you were able to avoid situations where you felt, I would certainly be criticized and judged, and I don't want to deal with this. So thanks to my self-rejection, I kept myself comfortable and safe, not realizing how painful and how damaging this self-rejection and self-denying is actually for you. And self-hatred. How much did that make you feel that you didn't really have to look outside for the blame? You didn't have to express the anger towards whatever and whoever hurt you, but really kept it inside and therefore avoided conflict, and therefore didn't have to upset others or put yourself into danger. How much has self-hatred, the identity of self-hatred, kept you in this imprisonment that was more predictable than if you would have put yourself out and maybe either confronted others or dared to express what, you know, you really felt or who you really are? And that just seemed to be too much and too unsafe. And so that self-hatred somehow tried to wrap you into a little bow that keeps you small and keeps you safe. Along those lines, you can imagine when you're listening to the inner critic, who is also a driving force for self-rejection and especially self-hatred. If you listen to that voice, do you sometimes notice that it's not really your voice? That it's more the voice of a parent or a teacher or a partner who was constantly on you, criticizing you, judging you, telling you there is something wrong with you? And can you imagine that by internalizing those messages, it also is a way for you to be safe by anticipating that if something like this would happen again, you can already avoid it because A, you don't let yourself get into these situations, and B, you already put yourself down before you will be put down by somebody else. What's important is when we feel self-rejection or self-hatred, that we need to understand that this is not our identity. And even though maybe the inner critic, the shame, the internalized anger that is turned towards us, or that sense of, I just want to avoid myself, neglect myself, ignore myself, even that feels so strong that it became our identity, that we think this is who we are, we need to remember that this is only a very small aspect of our truth. This is really just like the protective aspect of the mind living in constant survival mode. There is so much more to you than what shame, self-hatred, self-rejection allow you to see. Because it's the greatest fear of that inner protective mechanism for you to let go of this identity of self-hatred or self-rejection and all of a sudden start growing in your awareness of your goodness. Because the fear is, what if you all of a sudden gain confidence? What if you all of a sudden gain self-acceptance? What if you all of a sudden grow in size and are visible and show up in the world and have a voice and speak up on your behalf? The consequences could be awful. And there's a lot of uncertainty around what could happen if you would shed the shame and shed the hatred and rejection for good. But keep in mind that whatever that protective mechanism tried to prevent from happening, it is already happening because you're doing it to yourself. Whatever you were originally, your mind, afraid of could happen when people reject you, when people gang up on you, when people punish you, you are doing this on a daily basis worse than anyone else could do it to you. So at the core of self-hatred and self-rejection is fear. And the fear is about others. What can others do to me? And so self-rejection and self-hatred are ultimately saying, I'm going to take my power back by doing exactly what I'm afraid of others can do to me. I'm doing this to myself. And that is 24/7. And that is something that you cannot really prevent from happening because you're constantly exposed to yourself. So that sense of pain is way worse than any pain others can cause you. And that is important to already let sink in, that there is a way out of self-rejection and self-hatred by seeing that this protection doesn't work. It may have worked when you were very little and when you needed others to take care of you, when you needed them to protect you, clothe you, feed you. But now that you are more self-reliant, that you can take care of yourself, that you're not so in need to be ultimately at their grace, at their whim. Now that you can see yourself more as your own authority, it's time to realize that there are other ways to be safe than making yourself so small, so condensed, so tight, that all you can feel is just that intense anger and hatred towards yourself. So until the next episode, start thinking about who could I be if I would let go of these ropes, these chains that hold me back from expanding into a truer version of myself. Who could I be if I would let go of the idea that I have to hide underneath this wall, this rubble of self-hatred and self-rejection? What could emerge from within that I haven't dared to look at or to acknowledge or even express to the world? Be a little bit more curious. Be a little bit more curious and question the inner critic, realizing it's an overprotective aspect of yourself that ultimately just is used to do this, putting you down so that you're not put down and hurt by others unconsciously over and over again. But it's not necessary. You can allow yourself to simply respond to the inner critic and say, right now, I don't think I want to hear this anymore. Right now, I just want to open up to the idea that there is another way. I don't know what this way is. I don't know how to get there. But I believe that it's not my fault what happened to me. I don't believe that other people's actions towards me, other people's inability to love me or care for me, other people's dysfunction are not a reflection of who I am. This early confusion, this early interpretation of that confusion, that was out of despair. That was out of not knowing better. But now that I have consciously grown, I know better. There is another way. And maybe number one is actually what I should have chosen in the first place. Whatever happened to me is not my fault, and it's a reflection on those who did this to me and not a reflection on myself. And if you can just respond to this inner critic and that sense of, I need to fold myself into self-hatred right now because this is what keeps me safe, push against that. There is another way. You have a birthright to love and accept yourself. And that birthright is what we're going to start reclaiming today and in the next episode. So if this helped you to just understand yourself better, and if you feel others can also benefit from this, share this link, share this YouTube channel, sign up for it, and please ask questions, write comments, press the like button. It certainly makes a huge difference for me, and it's certainly wonderful to get the word out by you helping me this way. Thank you.